To support our work at the Izzy and Mortada Picture Show and the work of other independent creators like us, sign up to listen to the podcast on Nebula. Nebula is the creator-owned streaming platform that hosts great videos and podcasts like the one you're listening to now. Sign up today at nebula.tv/picture show, and you will get access to this podcast plus other great podcasts and videos. Sign up at Nebula and help support independent media creators. That's nebula.tv/picture show. Hi, I'm Mortada.
And I'm Izzy.
And this is the Izzy and Mortada Picture Show. Well, Christmas was yesterday. The Oscar nominations were announced. Or at least Christmas for, I don't know, 100 people, something like that, who got the gift of the nominations. Mm-hmm. And we are here to record our reactions to that. But first of all, the most important thing that happened yesterday when the nominations...
The first text I got in the morning.
Yes, I know. Is that
someone
I won?
Was gleeful.
I won the bet. Hooray me. Mm-hmm. Annette Bening was nominated for NIAID. Jodie Foster was nominated for NIAID. NIAID is a double Oscar nominee camp classic, and I get to win.
That's right. But I mean, I have yet to hear the consequences of this win. I'm eager. I'm eagerly awaiting.
You know, I just want to hold it over your head for the next couple of weeks until the actual Oscar ceremony. Every time we talk, I'm just going to say I won the bet and I knew what I was talking about.
And look how patient and kind and I'm being in return.
You are. I have to say I wavered a little bit. I was very confident when we made the bet that Annette will be nominated. I
yes,
was like,
you were.
Annette is the queen of Hollywood. She lives there. Everybody knows her. She was doing SAG charity during the strike. She's going to get nominated just based on that. People are just going to hear, Annette is in an Oscar movie. Of course I'm going to nominate her.
Yeah.
And then
and
she had...
If people are going to watch one movie on Netflix, it is apparently not May December.
It's not.
It's not yet.
Because it's made all the nominations. And then she had like a Rocky kind of cast, but I think it was Rocky only in the mind of Oscar pundits, and I need to stop reading Oscar pundits because they were all like, no, it's going to be this and it's going to be that, and I'm like, no, it's going to be Annette. I should have just, but anyway, it happened, so I think I was right. And I was also right in that Margot didn't get nominated. We can talk about that
but
Annette got in her spot. I just want to say that we'll save that, we'll talk later about it, but I'm so happy Annette did it. And Jodie, who basically was nominated everywhere. I think Annette missed here and there. But Jodie was basically nominated everywhere. She should have been nominated. So that was a luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yes.
Definitely the most, I think, like that conversation, which I know we're going to get to, has dominated so much of the reaction to this. And so I think it will be nice to have this moment to kind of like point out some things
other
that we're really
things.
Happy about.
Yes, we start with the happy. You know? I'm very happy about NIAID. And the happiest thing about NIAID getting two Oscar nominations is that so many more people are going to watch it on Netflix now. And the people who maybe were not that interested, I've already seen some people have watching it and people are discovering how funny it is and what a great sit it is, especially at Netflix. It's a camp classic. And I'm so happy that people are going to be doing that and having a laugh.
I'm going to give more input on this when we get there. But do we want to dive into maybe what everyone's favorite category, documentary short? No, just kidding. or like, how do we start? Maybe like original screenplay.
Sure. Let's start. Let's just do the top eight: the screenplays, direction, and acting, and best film.
Yes.
So original screenplay, the nominees are Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May December, and Past Lives. Mm-hmm. So this is I'm happy we're starting here because this is where we get to celebrate our beloved May December. It's one nomination, was in this category. So they made it through that. And I don't know, like three of these, I like Past Lives and Anatomy of a Fall, or the other two. I think it's a good...
The ones that I wanted to get in got in, which are Anatomy of a Fall, May December, Past Lives. Yeah. I also really like The Holdovers. I know you were less enthusiastic about it. I have read the Maestro screenplay, so and saw the movie. So I can say that my unenthusiasm for this continues to this day. So if I were to get to take one out of this category, it would be Maestro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have something you want to put into this category?
That is a great question.
The thing is, right now nothing is coming to my mind too, so I will
mine
just say
either.
Like my favorite thing about Past Lives was the screenplay, because I think it gets at those relationships with those three people really well, with an economy in dialogue, and it's a screenplay that's about emotional lives, and that's not always easy to write, because sometimes writers tend to over explain things, and people in real life never over explain things. They just talk mundanely about things, and I think Past Lives finds that balance so well, and for that I think I love it. And I think if I were voting, I would vote for Past Lives or May December, although I think of May December more as a Todd Haynes achievement as opposed to just just the screenplay.
But I think it's an achievement that Stanley Birch and Alex, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, but Mechanic, it looks like, should be credited for having written what naturally feels like a Todd Haynes film.
Yeah.
He could have written that. So I'm looking at the predictions from Variety that they posted a few days before the nominations were actually listed. And here's what they had predicted for the final five: Anatomy of a Fall, Holdovers, Past Lives, May December, and Saltburn.
Oh my God.
No, Maestro got in over Saltburn.
Oh, I mean, our two nemeses.
I know. And then the next in line category was Air, Fallen Leaves, which would have been nice. I would have loved to see that. The Boy and the Heron, and Iron Claw. So, I mean, Fallen Leaves, Boy and the Heron, and Iron Claw, to me, like, we're all better than Maestro, so.
Yeah, but I'm also like, I don't feel strongly about any of them. So Maestro had a $1 billion campaign behind it. It was not going to miss here. So not for Iron Claw.
And I also think, like, I mean, isn't this kind of true of like every category? It's usually like two or three that you feel really strongly about. And then like the others are kind of interchangeable.
Yeah. But I have to say, this year, for the most part, like just overall, I'm really happy with the nominations. Like when you look at Best Picture, like these are 10 very good movies for various reasons. And when you look at this, even if, you know, we will replace Maestro with something here, it's still like movies that obviously resonated with people. I'm not sure Maestro is resonating with people, but it resonated with the industry, obviously. Like it got 7 nominations.
For sure. And I think that is something that's going to come up again and again, especially when talking about snubs. Is how strong of a year this was, where, you know, you could name two or three really strong contenders who were left out for a lot of categories.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's move to the other screenplay category, which is adapted. So we have American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. And I have to say, just this is a much weaker category than original. Because I think what's glaringly missing here, obviously, is All of Us Strangers. And I don't know that I had problems with American Fiction. And I don't think Oppenheimer is very well written. There is a lot of exposition. And when you think about The Zone of Interest, it's not the screenplay. It's
everything else. I was a little confused by that because I haven't read the Zone of Interest book, but everything I've read about it suggests that it is almost entirely different from the film.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and maybe that's why the writers responded to it.
Right.
In that, because it's so different than the book. So he basically created something from not scratch, but like there was work put there, and that's maybe why people nominated. But yeah, I mean, obviously this now seems like an easy category to award Greta Gerwig. What do you think?
I mean, for sure. I feel like if Hillary Clinton's tweet didn't put a bullet in the back of Barbie's campaign likelihoods, this seems like a good likely award for her to win. But also, I mean, people are very enthusiastic about Poor Things and Oppenheimer. I don't see Killers of the Flower Moon winning this. And to be honest, now that I've read that book, I'm not even sure that it should win that.
Well, that's the one that missed, obviously, is Killers of the Flower Moon here. There was a controversial tweet online that somebody said the writer credited for Killers of the Flower Moon, Eric Roth, who's credited with Scorsese, actually didn't do much of the rewriting, and it was done by Paul Thomas Anderson, and that's why he wasn't campaigning, and so this is not a surprise. So I don't know how correct or not correct that is, but it seems a way to explain this.
I still need to see American Fiction too, but I've heard very mixed things about it, so I don't know.
I'm very mixed about it. The writing is smart in ways and poor in others. It's actually completely a writer's film. There is no visual panache to it, so it flies and dies by the writing. So I get writers responding to it, because it's got those quips and you know, it's got the structure to the screenplay, so there is a lot of hooks to it, and it's all in the writing. And so I get the nomination, but I just don't think this film was very successful at what it wanted to do.
Yeah, it is kind of hard, I don't know, to register how other people are going to think about this group of films, because I think that my personal take on most of them, except for Zone of Interest, is probably like less enthusiastic than the average viewer.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, I hear you. Yeah. And that's, me too. And that's why I was like, this is less strong than original. Because I think in original, there's like at least three amazing. I would nominate myself here, maybe zero.
Well, do you think, is that how normal for you? Do you find original screenplay more interesting generally than adapted?
Yes, for the most part, yeah. And original screenplay will usually have that movie that everybody in our circle loves, but the
Tar.
May, December this year, that kind of doesn't get much love anywhere else. And so there is always that, like 20th Century Women, I think, was here. You know, there is like always these movies that people at the beginning, oh my God, she's going to win Best Actress or whatever. And then in the end, oh, the lone screenplay nomination.
Totally, yeah. I just rewatched 20th Century Women, and Annette Bening is so good in that movie.
She's amazing in that movie. Crazy. Annette Bening should have won the Oscar. Also, that year was also another strong year where she was pushed out, because it was an A24 movie, the year of Moonlight, and they put their money where in the end it mattered and they won Best Picture.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Well, not unfortunate for Moonlight, but for her specifically. Yes. Okay, do you want to move on to Best Supporting Actor?
Let's do it. So Best Supporting Actor, the nominees are Sterling K. Brown, American Fiction, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling, Barbie, Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things.
Mm-hmm.
I like three of these for sure. The Force, which is Downey, I understand why he's there. So I did not like Sterling K. Brown's performance in American Fiction at all. I thought he was the weakest link in a movie full of very strong performances, and it's not his fault. He plays Jeffrey Wright's gay brother, and he's basically playing a theme, prejudice. So he's there so that the older mom can like be a little bit of a homophobe and call him names, and then he gets to react. And I'm like, you know what? This is such terrible writing, such a cliche. And I don't know why he got this nomination, except for the fact that he's very popular. He won like 17,000 Emmys. So I think he's popular in the industry.
Well, I mean, it seems like American Fiction kind of overperformed a lot of people's expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Because I really had not been hearing much about it.
I mean, it won the People's Choice at TIFF, which is a big indicator of Best Picture heat.
I think the major surprise was no Willem Dafoe.
Yes. And yeah, and it seemed like for some reason, Poor Things couldn't get both of them everywhere. It was always either or. And in the end, it was just like, well, who is it going to be? And it seems after SAG, the momentum was Dafoe, but I prefer Ruffalo. So Dafoe is very good too, but if there was only going to be one, I'm happy it's Ruffalo actually. And I'll explain why. Ruffalo gives the sort of performance that a lot of people are going to say is bad because it is a lot of acting, a lot of things coming at you. It's physical. He's talking differently. He's gesticulating with his arms. His face is never, and people are going to think of that as overacting, but it's not. He's playing a very silly man in a very silly movie. Like the rhythm of that movie is kind of silly. And I think he is the one who completely gets the silly rhythm of this film and represents it in his performance. And also he looks amazing. And I love it when sexy men get nominated because they never do. Sterling is also very sexy in American Fiction.
Willem Dafoe erasure.
Well, he does not look sexy in Poor Things.
According to who?
So here we have like three very sexy performances because Ryan Gosling, of course, plus Mark Ruffalo, plus Sterling. So sorry, Robert didn't. Sorry to the Roberts.
Well, here's the thing. I think if I were voting on this group, I would probably pick Robert De Niro, which is totally a very conventional pick, but
he's the best.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of ate that up.
He did eat it up.
It was really like evil incarnate in a very like specific American
way. Yes.
That is haunting.
Totally. He's America. Literally, he's America. He's playing America.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would vote for De Niro too.
About Robert De Niro. Yeah, what we just said about Robert De Niro is how people are thinking about Robert Downey Jr.'s role.
Probably,
Which is how, I mean, it seems like he's going to win.
Yeah, he has no competition, I think.
Okay, here's a pet theory that I have, mm-hmm. and I want to know what your take on it is. This, to me, very much feels like there's no planet on which we were actually going to give it to you for Iron Man.
Of course.
Like, do you remember, during Avengers Endgame? Because, the campaign, second film, it was, like, very much trying to get him an award for, like, his big death scene and whatever. And nobody bit.
Yeah. They were like, but here he not is. This bullshit.
Yeah. Here he is. In Oppenheimer, doing like a pretty conventional, like I think Robert Downey Jr. is a good actor.
Oh, he's great.
But it's like pretty conventional, this performance. Yeah. I think
it's I agree with your theory. It's his time. Somebody who's worked for a very long time with a lot of people, made a lot of people, added to their success in many ways by appearing in their movies or whatever. And they're all going to vote for him because he has done his bit to the industry.
Also, I do feel like we're kind of so far divorced from what the kind of Robert Downey Jr. discourse was for a really long time, which was like he was a problem child, you know, like he had so many years where he like kind of had to disappear because of like mental health problems and addiction and like all of this stuff that he really had to overcome. And Iron Man was like such a huge part of that redemption. And so now it's kind of like, I don't know, this.
Yeah.
A really nice exclamation point to that
part. Exactly. And he's been killing it in the speeches. Like, this totally reminds me of Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in America. He's a major star. Why is he winning supporting actor? But it's just the right movie at the right time. He's the right age. He's put enough work. And then he goes out and charms everyone, indicates that he really wants it. And then people are like, well, yeah, I want to hear that speech again a version of it or whatever. And so I think he's just going to steamroll because I don't see that Ryan Gosling is doing enough. I think Ryan Gosling could have won this if he really wanted it. But I don't know. He's too serious an actor to me. He probably doesn't want to win for Ken.
I know. Yeah. Well, and here's another thing. I mean, teasing some of the conversations I think we'll have later on. But like, to me personally, mm-hmm. Ryan Gosling was the standout performance of Barbie.
Mm-hmm. Totally agreed.
They give him the most comedic meat to chew on. The big dance number is his. And I don't think that is a statement whatsoever about the message of the film. I think it's just like truly a credit to kind of like the background and type of performance he is capable of doing. And the training he has as like a dancer and actor and kind of like cheesing it up. That's part of his DNA. And so I'm not upset that he got this nomination. I think it's well deserved. And it's sort of silly that he had to kind of apologize for being a talented person.
It is so silly. Obviously, I would have loved to see somebody from All of Us Strangers here, or Charles Melton, who remember the dream of Charles Melton was going to win the Oscar. We are mad at the first actor to win for a Todd Haynes movie is going to be a man. Oh my God.
I am naive.
How deluded were we, right?
I know. It's so crazy. I mean, yeah, if Charles Melton were here, sorry, Robert De Niro, that's where my vote's going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. So crazy. I feel so awful. I really do have so many question marks about everything that happened with May December.
Yeah,
award season.
May December was never going to be an award season thing. It's Todd Haynes. Todd Haynes made the most industry friendly movie of his career, which was Carol, and he still didn't get nominated.
Dark Waters. Mark Ruffalo could have gotten a nomination for Dark Waters.
Maybe, but yeah. But also, like, this is a movie about all the things about actors being mercenaries, about the age gap things, about sexual abuse, about things people just don't want to deal with in any way. And so I am not surprised that it didn't get anything.
Well, which is crazy because it's like there are some really, really challenging films on this Best Picture list. Like Zone of Interest is the most like ethically challenging and structure like formally challenging film,
but the Holocaust is historically their most favorite subject throughout
well,
the
World
95
War II, for sure. World War II, or like even Oppenheimer, like wrestling with that kind of stuff, or like obviously Killers of the Flower Moon. I mean, like, this is literally a genocide. Like, it's so crazy that we're like, don't come for actors, though. That's
I know,
a little too complicated.
It's so stupid, and I like just. Like Lady Gaga last year, not making the list in the final stretch. I always think the Academy just doesn't want to have fun. Like, why wouldn't it have been so much fun to see Charles Melton at so many more events looking great and hot and talking, you know, or Julianne Moore or Todd? You know, they just don't want to have fun. I don't know. They want Robert Downey Jr. I guess that's their kind of fun.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I don't know. I'm happy that there are a lot of like adult like complex films this year.
Yes.
And I'm sad that that wasn't part of that trend.
Yes.
But like, yeah, it is nice. I feel like more so, even like the dumb biopics this year, I feel are more mature than they have been in the past.
Yeah. Or sillier like Naiad, but enjoyable.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Shall we move to supporting actress?
Shall we move? Yes. I mean, just talking again about May December because I won't shut the fuck up. But Julianne Moore pouring one out for her.
Yes. I mean, so the nominees are Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer, Daniel Brooks, The Color Purple, America Ferrera, Barbie, Jodie Foster, Naiad, and Dave Vine, Joy Randolph for the holdovers. And I think the surprise here is obviously America Ferrera, who hasn't really appeared in many lists before. And that spot, those other four were always kind of everywhere. And that other spot was the open one. At some places it was Julianne, at others it was Penelope Cruz. So kind of if you look back now, there was only one spot open. And then America Ferrera came in on the strength of Barbie and took it. I kind of don't like this category a lot. Like, I love Jodie, obviously, and we talked about her. And thank you, Jodie, for that performance that made me win my bet. Emily Blunt's first nomination to be for Oppenheimer after the heights of that woman's career in things like The Devil Wears Prada and Mary Poppins, even though nobody loved that, but she was great. Like, it's to just be playing the wife seizing in the background, and that's what gets you an Oscar nomination, is just... literally tells you all you need to know about the Academy's treatment of actresses in its 95 years. Like, she's such a star, and her first nomination, who has led so many movies, big box office hits, smaller indie films. And in the end, she's just in this man movie as one of only two women in the movie, sitting literally behind her man. the whole movie. So, and that's her first Oscar nomination. So, well, congrats, Emily, but she's the one I would not put here at all.
Right. I mean, I think they do give her a little bit of a brain, even though it's very much like a you know, it's a very stereotypical role. But I do feel like she did a little bit with it to make it to make her seem a little bit bold and like interesting. But yeah, it's just like not really an interesting role. And like, certainly compared to things that were left out, it would not have made my list.
Yeah. Absolutely not. Like, Julianne Moore and Penelope Cruz.
Penelope Cruz. Please.
Even Rosamund Pike. I don't like that movie, but that would have been a better nomination. I have to say, let's talk a little bit about The Color Purple, because The Color Purple, I think, had an interesting trajectory. It was a movie that was picked for Oscar just based on the fact that every single iteration of The Color Purple won so many awards.
Yep.
Pulitzer, Tonys, Oscars, although it didn't win. It was nominated for 12.
Famously none.
won none. But anyway, on Broadway, in books, in movies, that material always gets nominations and awards.
Yeah.
And so, and then they made this, and it wasn't very good. And Christmas Day, everybody who wanted to see it went to see it, and then nobody else went to see it, because it like had a great opening, and then it just dived down. But I think the thing was, you know, and this happens every year, there is always one actor who the buzz for the role, based on the fact that people know the character or the material, know the actor, and know that when paired with this material, they're going to give an amazing performance. They just pin that name there as somebody who is going to get that nomination. And no matter how the film performs in the end, they still get nominated. And that's Daniel Brooks this year.
Well, I also feel like so much of that was aided by the fact that she had recently done it on stage. Like, Fantasia obviously also did it on stage, but it was quite a while ago. This is pretty recent. And I think like a couple of people from that production have really been elevated since then.
Yeah.
Daniel Brooks being one of them, but the obvious one being Cynthia Erivo.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, I feel like that, if you had seen that production recently, then you would have like a special affinity for her because she was very excellent on stage.
Yes.
And so like maybe a less than reproduction of that performance on film kind of is like, well, we still love you, you know?
Yeah. And she was very good. She's very good. And in the film, and she is somebody who should be an Oscar nominee. So I am very happy that she managed it, but I think it's just, you know, I kind of explained why I think it happened. But I thought she was going to win, but obviously now she's not. Like, I don't know if you've asked me before the movie came out who I would say Daniel Brooks, based on everything I said. But no, I think Devine has this in the bank.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And she's also like Danielle, you know, somebody who's been working steadily in different mediums for at least a decade. People know her work, and finally got that role in a movie that they love. And it's time.
Yeah. Yeah, agree. I mean, the supporting actor ones seem pretty locked up.
Yes. Do you like the America Ferrera thing? Because it's just that monologue, which... it represents...
people love that monologue.
Yes. And the monologue represents the best and the worst of Barbie. If you don't like Barbie, it's because of that monologue is so rudimentary. Right. And if you love Barbie, you love that monologue. So the Academy loves Barbie, so I'm not surprised she got in.
Right. I do think... I'm happy that there are people that identify with that monologue, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. Like, yeah. I personally, it didn't do what it needed to do for me, but like, yeah. it's not, they're not lying. Like, that is true. Not. And yeah. so it's sort of like, if that is resonating with you and like, uh-huh. that is a fundamental truth that you needed to hear in your life, like, that is a good thing that this is like helping you realize something or whatever. And so in that sense, like, I do think this performance is like important for a lot of people, and that's cool that that's reflected in the nomination.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that because America Ferrera's character kind of needs to stand in for the every woman, like, she is kind of the straight man of the show, where like everybody needs to identify with her, mm-hmm. which kind of means like there isn't a lot that's very idiosyncratic about her or mm-hmm. very like special or specific mm-hmm. to like yeah. this woman that makes me like fall in love with her as a character. And so to me, it's like, if, since I'm going to use May, December for everything, like if I compare that to like the very specific and like thorough choices that Julianne Moore is making, like, it's mm-hmm. just not going to impress me or resonate with me on the same level.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's just, it kind of is like intentionally a blank slate.
Yes, absolutely. Or the sort of just fill the screen with your light sort of performance that Juliette Binoche is giving in The Taste of Things, where
the
camera's on her and you literally can, it's like Ingrid Bergman, when you sometimes they put some light on her and you're like, is this Ingrid Bergman or the sun? That's kind of how I felt with Juliette Binoche. And that's something that not a lot of people can do. And Juliette can do it so easily. And, you know, I would have liked to see Juliette or Julianne or Penelope, but they're, you know, they're legends of the screen, and that's fine.
Sure.
And they've had their Oscar moments, so it's all good.
Yeah, like, I'm not like bitter about this. And to be honest, I do think America Ferrera has some of that. Like, mm-hmm. America, she has an energy where you like want to hang out with her and mm-hmm. feel like you're friends with her. And that's kind of why she's good at this role. So it's
perfect casting, totally.
Yeah, that's great. So sure, it's a little surprising and not what I would have listed, but like, I have no energy to be mad about it.
Yes, no. Oh God, why? Why would we ever do that? Okay, let's move to the men, although who cares? But anyway, the nominees in Best Actor: Bradley Cooper, Maestro. Love you, Bradley. Colman Domingo, Rustin. Fantastic. Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers. Okay. Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer. And Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. I have to say, I've loved Jeffrey Wright for years and years and years, and I'm so happy he finally got a nomination, because mm-hmm. He's been brilliant in everything he has done, stage, TV, movies, for a very, very long time. I mean, we all remember his performance that won him an Emmy in the Tony Kushner thing. What is it called?
Angels in America?
Angels in America. Like, mm-hmm. that was such a seminal performance. It was a seminal moment for everyone. But then he gives that performance on stage and on TV, wins every award, and you would think he is going to be the next Denzel, or I don't know who's like the best actor of their generation, something like that. Like, he was that performance and just somehow never got there. He actually, so surprisingly, this is his first lead film in 2 decades or something like that. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So this is, I think, a nomination that should have happened, I don't know, 25 years ago, something like that. So it's very good to see him here, even though I don't like his film, but I think he's marvelous in it. And if there is any reason to see it, it's to see his performance, and wonderful. Great.
I feel like he was kind of like absorbed into the Wes Anderson universe, which almost kind of guarantees that you're going to get overlooked for
totally for acting awards. Absolutely.
Because what was the one that came out? The French Dispatch. Like, he was kind of, he's almost always like the bright spot of like of his films.
Yeah, and he was so good in the French Dispatch, and doing that sort of difficult thing of playing somebody so recognizable, because it was a take on James Baldwin, but at the same time, mm-hmm. it's a fictional thing. And so he was straddling that line so well, like, oh yeah, I can see James Baldwin in what you're doing, but also you're not. Mm-hmm. You're this fictional thing that Wes Anderson came up with, which is really hard to do. And he's such a great actor. So I'm very happy for this.
That is really exciting.
Are you excited about anyone in this category?
I really like Colman Domingo.
Yes.
I really like Paul Giamatti.
Mm-hmm. Paul Giamatti is great too. Great actor. Yeah.
And I really like Cillian Murphy. I think I like these individuals quite a bit. Who would I vote for? I'd probably vote for Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, I mean, I think Paul Giamatti is going to win because it's a good performance in a movie they love. And
you
he's somebody.
You think he's
going to
beat Cillian Murphy?
No, I don't think so. The big blockbuster movie that wins all the other awards almost never wins a lead Oscar because they just feel like if we gave a director, that's enough. It doesn't need director and actor. And so I think, and this, I think Paul, that's why I think Paul Giamatti would win. I'm also just happy for Colman Domingo because I think he elevates Rustin and makes it a much more interesting movie than it has any right to be with his performance that feels so lived in, so beautifully queer. You know, I have no problem with straight people playing queer characters, but when you see a queer man understanding how exactly to move his body as a gay man on screen and a gay director giving him the space and the costumes and the camera angles to see his body as a gay man moving in swishy flamboyance, it was something to see and love. And, you know, I love that it's there, that it's captured. So, you know, people can see that and see that this is, you know, beautiful. And so I'm very happy for this nomination also because he deserved it for If Beale Street Could Talk. He deserved it for Zola. Finally he gets that, that moment. So it's great.
Yeah, that's very exciting. I do remember seeing some tweets, along those lines, RE passages. People are like Ben Wishaw doing something different here.
So is Coleman. So yeah. Yeah. So that's great.
So that sounds correct. I mean, people love Cillian Murphy's performance. Mm-hmm. I thought it was Cillian Murphy's always good.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it's also sort of like a quiet, recessive performance. Like he's there in almost every scene, but like I think, like it happened. What happens around him? Also, he anchors it. But kind of all the flashy things goes to the other characters. And so he's just there as a reactor. And so sometimes you feel that the movie is happening in spite of him and not because of him. And so I get why he got nominated because he's in the biggest movie of the year. Although Margot Robbie might beg to differ. But anyway, but I don't see this as a winning performance. You know, do you have a moment? Everybody, to win, you have to have a moment that people can just remember without actually watching the film. And I personally cannot tell you what his moment, his Oscar clip is. So,
oh, like an individual. Yeah, maybe. Oh, he doesn't have like a monologue, I guess, that I remember. But I do think part of what is so arresting about Cillian Murphy is just like the structure of his face, just like truly like the architecture of expressions that he can make, because he's so angular. And so like introspection looks really good on him.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Like it is interesting to watch when he is pondering something or like when he's distressed about something. And so I think in that sense, like he's very captivating and kind of like the right person to play this role because so much of it is like what's sitting behind your eyes. And if your eyes are like his, easy to watch. So I get it. I mean, I think he's kind of able to balance that like cocky genius strut that I think they wanted Oppenheimer to have for this movie. So I do think it was like impressive, but it's not something where I was, I felt any like personal kind of draw to it in the way that I felt about maybe like Paul Giamatti.
Yeah,
where there's like something a little more like strange to grasp onto.
Yeah. Oh, it just pulls at the heartstrings more. His movie and his role are just more cerebral, which is fine, but it's not like the kind of thing that you get emotionally attached to.
Right. Totally. And then of course there's Bradley Cooper.
I mean, this is kind of a respectable five. Like, I would have liked to see Andrew Scott or Leonardo DiCaprio in here.
I think Leo was a surprise.
Yes. I mean, It is the same five. These are the five people that were nominated by SAG. So it's kind of a semi surprise. But I'm surprised that Leo kind of just didn't get in the end, because he, I think, campaigned this year more than he's ever done. But he was campaigning for Lily, not for himself. So I don't know. And he is playing a villain, you know, same as Natalie Portman. Maybe they just saw themselves too much in that man.
Yeah. And yeah, Leo is also kind of one of those actors who is like simultaneously extremely respected, but also like notoriously overlooked. Yeah. Like there was that whole meme for a really long time
about him not winning an Oscar.
Yeah.
And sometimes it happens.
And I feel
when
like
you
that's starting to happen with Bradley Cooper, but it's, I think, more malicious with Bradley Cooper. Like people kind of are enjoying that he doesn't have one.
I don't know why.
In a way that, like, it was a little, there was a tinge of sadness behind the Leo one.
Yeah. Yes. And Leo I also, you know, Leo, Bradley Cooper doesn't have a Titanic or a Romeo and Juliet. Like, Leo has been in the fantasies of many people for many years. And that's, I think, why people were always sad that he didn't win an Oscar.
Right. And also because, well, I think as we've discussed many times before, like, ambition is very much something people like to watch. And like Bradley Cooper piloting all of his own projects in a way that like Leonardo DiCaprio never really has, at least like on the directorial front. He does a lot of producing, I think. But but I mean, here's the thing. When I will be so happy for Bradley Cooper when he makes something that I care about.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Maestro wasn't it. But he eked that nomination, and good for him. Not just this, is he 7 nomination. That's not something to sneeze at. So
yeah, totally.
But, and the movie, that's to your point about ambition. The film shows his ambition as a filmmaker.
Yes.
And I think he doesn't want to be a Leo. I think he wants to be a Clint Eastwood. Right. Like, if you look at career trajectories, that's what he wants. And so I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to win Best Actor. And he's just waiting for that movie that will give him his Unforgiven, you know, to finally be acknowledged as an auteur. And Clint Eastwood didn't get there until he was older than what Bradley Cooper is now, probably not by much. So
right. Did Clint Eastwood write his own films as well?
You know what? I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah. Doesn't but strike me as a writer.
Me neither. But I think like that's the big hurdle for Bradley Cooper. Like
that he writes them.
Well, I think he can write maybe a good screenplay, but like I think the screenplay is consistently the thing that is like the worst of the trifecta for him.
Yeah, maybe. He did have a partner on this one, so.
Yeah, the estate of Leonard Bernstein.
All right, shall we move to our favorite two? Because I think we're going to talk about Best Actress and Best Director together. All right, so let me announce the nominees. So Best Director, the nominees are Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, our beloved Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, and of course, Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall. I think what's missing here is obviously Greta Gerwig, Celine Song, and Bradley Cooper. In Best Actress, Annette Bening for Naiad, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, Emma Stone for Poor Things. Also missing, I would say, Fantasia Barrino, and Greta Lee for Past Lives, and of course the big snub that everybody wants to talk about, which is Margot Robbie in Barbie. I think Best Director is an amazing category. Of the films that are in contention this year that are making serious play, I think they could not have come with a better list. I know movies that we love, like May December and All of Us Strangers and all of that, which I would nominate those directors here, were not
we
really...
We have to be a little realistic here.
Yeah, they were not in serious contention.
Right.
So
I will still complain about it, but I know I'm being crazy.
Yes. So if there were seven directors from these five that were nominated, the other two would be Greta Gerwig and Alexander Payne for The Holdovers. And of those seven, personally, me, Murtada, I think they chose the right five.
Right. I think this is what a lot of people keep saying online, right? Is like, if you think someone is snubbed, you need to say which of the five should have been taken out of the category.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes, and Ryan Gosling, who do you hate in these five? Tell us. Right. You can't just say
that. Who is it?
Who is it?
Are you coming for Sandra Hüller? No. To me, I have said my piece about Oppenheimer. So like, I am not, I don't care about Christopher Nolan being in there. I know he's going to win this category anyway. So it's sort of like.
So you would take him out?
If it were me, yeah, I would.
But from the seven, who would you put in Christopher Nolan's? Payne or Gerwig?
Probably Gerwig.
Okay. Why Gerwig over Payne? And you love The Holdovers.
I did love The Holdovers. Mm-hmm. To me, I think what impressed me about Barbie is that it was very visually complicated to do. Mm-hmm. So like on the one hand, you have like all of these sets, you need to figure out how to make like a plastic indoor world feel real and vibrant, but also the real world, but also a musical. Like there's a lot of stuff going on that felt very coherent as a story. Well, maybe not so much as a story sometimes, but like, you know what the world looks like and it makes sense. And like everything is kind of cohesive. So I do think that is like a pretty impressive achievement that requires, it's like much more intense and, I don't know what the right word is. Complicated? I don't know. Mm. Than like putting together an average, like we're shooting this on the street period film.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's just so many elements going into it that I think is challenging, especially when she's never made anything like that before. Yeah. This is not the kind of film that Greta Gerwig has made in the past.
Yep, totally.
So like to me, that is really interesting and not something that like those kind of practical sets and effects isn't anything that anybody else is really doing right now. Like everything is CGI'd. So to have like the vision to do that is, I think, worthy of recognition, more so than Oppenheimer to me, but a lot of people don't feel that way.
Yeah.
Do I think it's more than like Zone of Interest, which is like one of the, as I said, most formally interesting films that's like come out in the past couple of years? No. Poor Things, same thing. I think like what he did to do to make that so cohesive as like a world is like just as interesting, if not more, than Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
Killers of the Flower Moon, like what can you even say about Scorsese?
Scorsese, hello. Okay, let me just say one thing about Scorsese. I love him, and I'm so happy that he passed Spielberg, and now he is the director. No, there's, I think William Wyler has more nominations than him, but he has more than Spielberg, which is very important to me.
Yeah. And then Justine Triet, which like is an, hello. I mean, she's like the author of that from,
oh my God,
like ground
yes.
to ceiling, you know what I mean? So it's just kind of like there isn't really anyone besides Christopher Nolan that I would be like, take him out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And this is the thing. Christopher Nolan was not going to be out. So you have to choose one of the other four. And of those other four, nobody. I wouldn't want anybody to leave this list.
Yeah. So, sorry.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, like, I feel like a lot of this conversation has been like that they were completely snubbed.
Yeah.
Like nothing for Barbie. Meanwhile, this film has 8 nominations, earned $1 billion, and Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie have other nominations for other things besides like that.
Likely to win at least one Oscar, if not both of them win. So at least kind of one of them is gonna win.
Right. It's a little like silly.
It's very silly. It's very silly. Yes. As an actress, Margot Robbie probably cared more about Best Actress than Best Film, but I don't know. And Greta is probably thinks of herself more as a director than a writer, but hello, she started as a writer. So it doesn't matter. They are Oscar nominees. So I don't know what this, they're not snubbed. This is just all stupid.
Yeah, and it's very silly.
What the fuck is Hillary Clinton doing? Does she hear like a white woman feminism whistle or something? And then she comes in and says it. Fuck you, shut up.
It's really crazy.
So as somebody who wanted to be head of state of the most powerful nation in the world, you know what? You should be thinking about what else is happening in the world and not fucking Barbie being fucking snubbed when it wasn't.
Well, and also I think it's really weird to just kind of like read the room and understand that the woman who is probably going to win Best Actress is Lily Gladstone.
Yes.
Who like...
Oh my God, yes. Hello.
A gives an extreme... Like her performance is the key
fantastic
to all of this.
Yeah.
But it's also like the historical achievement of her even being there.
Yes.
Is like wildly impressive and worth much more ink than, you know, anything people could say about Barbie.
Oh my
God.
So, yes.
It's like so strange and like willfully misreading
everything
that's going on. Best director. Like there are 10 things nominated for best film or best picture.
Yeah.
By virtue of like numbers, half of those are not going to make it into best director. So like the energy that people are giving to Barbie needs to also be given to like Alexander Payne, to Celine Song. Like why doesn't this exist for them? Like it is very crazy to like put all of this weight of like
on
Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, like I would have, you know, personally, we were talking about 7 because Celine Song kind of wasn't a realistic choice in best director, but I would put her above Gerwig because that movie is just touch me more than Barbie.
Right.
So even if we're talking women, and I love that I hate my friend Rafa Sales did this very good tweet when she said there is no quota in the Academy that says only one woman could be nominated because everybody was like mad at Justine Triet.
Yeah.
I guess because she's the least famous of the five. And I'm like, why?
Like she won the Palme
she won Cannes. She won Cannes, the Palme d'Or. She won the European Academy. She was a shoo-in for sure. And this is not a bias against women. So shut up, Hillary Clinton and whoever else is talking about this. This is a bias about big blockbuster movies that make a lot of money. And the director's branch is notorious for this. You know, they do not nominate the director of the biggest hit. When Dune won like 7 Oscars, Denis Villeneuve wasn't nominated. This happens all the time.
I do think like the only thing that I would say is that like Barbenheimer has always been paired. And to me, Oppenheimer is as much of a blockbuster kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. But
as Barbie is.
Totally.
I think more is aligned with their taste.
Exactly. It is more aligned with their taste. Yes.
So I think that's kind of like fair to point out.
Yeah.
But it is very, very over-exaggerated. And the thing about Margot Robbie to me is like, A, it's a really strong year, as we've already said. There's so many people who've been overlooked who like
Natalie Portman, hello.
You know, just shake the bag a different way and you might pull up a different name. You know what I mean? Like there's so many people. And it's like, to me, everything that I've read about Barbie suggests that her influence as a producer was extremely authorial from like selecting who would be in it to like securing the resources to like even getting the right release date.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of these things are because of Margot Robbie's influence behind the scenes. And that to me is an extraordinary achievement. Like is literally no other equivalent of like an actress piloting a $1 billion film.
Phenomenon. Yes. And she's been acknowledged for that. She
is
nominated.
She was correctly nominated.
As producer of one of the best films of the year. So she's getting her due, so shut up. And I just want to say something. If you go back to when we talked, I think last episode or the episode before, when I was trying to make the case for Annette, and I said she'll probably come in at the expense of Margot Robbie, because when people talk about Barbie, nobody ever talks about her performance.
Nobody. This is what made me crazy, because I was like, I feel like I'm in La La Land, LOL. But I was like, I feel like I'm in Crazy Town, because I feel like over the past couple of weeks, every time you see a clip from Barbie on social media, it is either Ryan Gosling or it is like a random one-off line from like Issa Rae.
Or America Ferrera's monologue.
Yes. Like nobody was like Margot Robbie's performance. Blah, blah, blah. Like it's a good performance, but I don't feel like it is transcendent in
it's
any
not,
way.
No.
It is like I could see Anna Faris doing as good a job.
Oh my God. Oh, brilliant.
Like Kate Hudson, you know, in her prime would have been like fantastic. Yeah. Like it is, again, written in a very specific way where it's like, it needs to resonate with like every woman. Mm-hmm. It needs to, she is there in part because she can play like a beautiful blonde charismatic woman. Like it is written to be tailored to her gifts. There is no stretch or challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
As compared to like I, Tonya, which I feel was much a better performance from her. But the fact is like, it's a much stronger year. She's not going to get the nomination like she did for Bombshell when it was like a struggle to even fill categories for women a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I agree 100% with you. Like, you know, we should be talking about Greta Lee. We should be talking about Natalie Portman. There are so many other actresses this year that we could be talking about instead of Margot Robbie. And it's fine. I think this is a very strong five. I think I love all these five performances. Maybe Annette Bening for different reasons, but she is a legend and an amazing actor and deserves to be here. And I'm happy she's here. And one thing I am sort of like happy about of all this online discourse, because when it first happened, I'm like, oh my God, is Annette Bening going to be the villain of the year? Because basically the other four, Carrie, Emma, Lily, and Sandra kind of were everywhere and people kind of were predicting them and nobody was predicting Annette. And now people are going to be, I'm like, oh my God, is the internet going to leave Bradley and turn on Annette? And it didn't happen, thank God, because I would not have been able to take the internet turning on Annette Bening.
So. I haven't seen so much of that either, and I really thought that that would be the case.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think enough people have even seen Naya.
Well, now they're going to like see it, and they're going to know that Annette is a genius, and they're going to love her.
Yeah, it's very still. I mean, you know, what's interesting to me is I feel like usually there is that one performance, right, where it's like this woman is like nominated all the time, and so like of course we like expect to see her in there, and I feel like Annette kind of fills that void in this category. But the other four, like obviously Lily and Sandra are completely new. Carrie's shown up a couple of times, but I don't feel like she's that exactly. Like she's not Annette.
Not yet.
And
oh
Emma
god
Stone,
no
I mean, is bordering on her second, but I also feel like she's, it's not like she's nominated a million times.
It's her fourth nomination. It's Annette's fifth nomination. So don't discount. Look
Maybe
at how
just
much
forget
she's
Emma Stone's career.
She is 30 years younger than Annette Bening and only has one less nomination than Annette Bening.
Really wild. Okay. What are they?
And let's
was she
let's,
nominated for like The Help? What am I thinking? Oh,
no, she was nominated for Birdman, for La La Land, for The Favorite, and now Poor Things. That's four.
My God.
And this year she has two nominations because she achieved what Margot Robbie didn't and is nominated as Best Actress and for Best Film as a producer of Poor Things.
Right.
So, you know, I think I'm happy that this thing happened because it just took the light a little bit out of Emma Stone, because I don't want people to turn on Emma Stone, because she is actually accomplishing a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
She's at the prime of her career. And it is actually, I wish she hadn't won for La La Land, because this would have been the right moment and the right film to give her the Oscar. But you know what? She has an Oscar. So she can just take, she is not really campaigning to win Best Actress. I don't see her doing that.
I don't think she is either.
She's not doing that. She might be campaigning to win Best Picture, which she should try to win it, but also she probably will not.
I think she's trying to win her Emmy.
Maybe she's definitely not trying to win this over Lily. She was so surprised when she won the Critics' Choice and made her speech all about the other nominees and whatever, and she's laying, like you said, she's talking about the curse more than Poor Things.
But I think very excited about Lily Gladstone.
Yes.
Sandra Hohler. I know Sandra Hohler is not going to win, but
yeah,
you know,
but now I'm excited to see who wins BAFTA, because Lily is not there. Lily is going to win the Oscar. There is no doubt about that. But like, she's not in BAFTA, which is the next big award. I guess SAG is SAG before. So we'll see SAG. I don't know which one is before the other. Anyway, so there's SAG where Sandra's not there. So SAG is between Lily and Emma. And then you go to BAFTA, Lily's not there, and it's between Emma and I think Sandra. So if Sandra wins BAFTA, then we know 100% for sure Lily's winning the Oscar. But if Emma wins BAFTA, which is a pass that has happened before for Olivia Colman, her darling friend from The Favourite, where everybody thought Glenn was going to win, and then she went and won BAFTA and then won the Oscar. So we'll see. Anyway, it's exciting. But I think Lily's safe to win this.
I feel like I need to do some Lily Gladstone propaganda.
But I think Emma might win BAFTA. We'll see. I hope it's Sandra, because Sandra, like, she won the European Award for Best Actress, which is major, but I would like her, like, to give a speech. We've seen Emma Stone give speeches.
I also do wonder how Zone of Interest is going to play into this for the BAFTA, because, like, obviously she's not nominated for that, but I think...
No,
like,
she is. At BAFTA, she has both. Two nominations, yes.
So, but I think, like, that combination might be interesting, because there is, like, an investment... in the UK, in Zone of Interest.
Yeah, so she might... Yeah, we'll see if she wins any of those. And I mean, BAFTA has done their thing. Like, last year, they gave Everything Everywhere Nothing. And two people from the Banshees of Inisherin, one supporting actor and supporting actress. So if somebody... if Devine was going to not win anywhere, it's going to be in London. So we'll see.
For maybe sure. I mean, oh, for sure.
So, I mean, Kihi Kwanku didn't manage it. So I think Devine might stumble there too, but she's all obviously all safe for the Oscars.
Yeah. Ugh, God. I can't believe we have to talk about this for another month.
We don't. We can talk about other things.
Two months.
I know. It's not till March. That's like Christ. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think we talked about Best Picture. We don't need to talk about it, but I just think it's a very strong 10. Like, these are good 10 films. Yes, May, December is not there. You know, all the movies that we love that we talked about the last few months are not there. But representing the year, like, it's a very good balance of big blockbusters, movies that formally interesting, movies that are historically interesting, legend directors, actors we love. You know, it's, you know, movies that pull at your heartstrings. Like, it's representative of the year. And all these movies, I might not like one or two here and there, but it's a good list.
Totally, yeah. I think, you know, as... if you're gonna, the Oscars Best Picture is like always combing the top layer of like taste in America, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, I feel like if that's...
or in LA, of just LA.
That's true. Of what, if that's like what we garnered from this year, like, that's an extraordinarily strong year.
Yeah.
In comparison to like,
yeah, totally.
A couple of recent years.
Yes.
It's funny too to think about, like, I would take any of these over like Coda. Remember when Coda won Best Picture?
Oh my God, don't remind me. You know, I just came back from Sundance, and it's their 40th year. And so before every movie, they play this thing of like the highlights of their 40 years. And it ends with Coda, like that short video ends with Coda. And every time I'm just like, what the fuck were people thinking that year?
Did you see? Okay, so Sundance pulled, I think it was like 500 critics something.
I'm guilty because I refused to do it. I just was busy, so I didn't.
I think a lot of people did because some Whiplash. They released like the top 10 ever, like, Sundance darlings, and Whiplash got number one, which is
that's
so
terrible.
Funny.
Who voted?
Who put Whiplash on there?
Yeah.
And just like the number of things that it was like, I just could not believe that list. But also, I don't even think Coda was on it.
Yeah, well,
which
good.
Which is so funny because it literally won Best Picture and nobody cares about it.
The only Sundance movie to win Best Picture. I was very disappointed in that list. I just saw the 10. They had a terrible... if somebody from Sundance is listening to this, you got to listen to this. I'm sorry. They had a very terrible timeline for that list. It's 40 years of movies, which is a lot. And they did send you every movie that played at Sundance. I started looking at it and I was so overwhelmed by the sheer number of films. And I was going to do just top 10 off the top of my head. And I'm like, but that's not, like, you know... fair to Sundance, to the filmmakers who went there. So then I was like, all right, but they sent it a day before Christmas and the deadline was like January 4th. Hello, everybody's
oh
going.
My God.
So I was like, That's in the crazy. End, I was like, I don't have time to do this. I'm sorry. I can't go through 40 years of movies during Christmas.
That's so crazy. Yeah. I think it was Rajendra Roy, who's like the chief curator of film at MoMA. He was like, any Sundance list that doesn't have like queer filmmakers on it is like not a real list.
No.
Like, that's not real.
It's not real. Paris is Burning is not there. Todd Haynes is not there.
Yeah.
Poison. Like, Poison, what the fuck?
Please. Please.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, you know, so I at Sundance, they had the equivalent of this list. So they had this talk with Christine Vachon, Richard Linklater, Dawn Porter, and Miguel Arteta. Four directors, filmmakers who have been coming to Sundance almost the entirety of its... And they talked, none of them mentioned any of those top movies. They mentioned things like Parting Glances, like the Jim Jarmusch movies, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that's not what people remember. You know, Hoop Dreams, you know, things like that. And I'm just, I think Hoop Dreams was in the top 10, if I'm, you know,
yeah,
anyway, probably
been,
the only one that deserves to
crazy.
Be there. Who remembers fucking Whiplash?
Wait,
Who voted for this? 19-year-olds? Like, what the fuck is this?
Hold on. Okay, yeah, I'm gonna read the list because I think it was funny. Okay, number 10, Blood Simple.
Okay.
Not bad. That's fine. Yeah. Y tu mama también.
Okay, cool. Good movie.
Boyhood. Before Sunrise. Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Memento. Little Miss Sunshine. Get Out. Reservoir Dogs. And Whiplash.
It's such a bro-y movie. I mean, literally, Boyhood is there. This is a bro list. I'm just like, and you know, I'm not blaming Sundance. I'm blaming them for the timing. They should have sent this list in August. They knew this was their 40th year and they wanted to do that. They should have sent it in August, gave everybody a month to do it, and not send it before Christmas and give you 2 weeks. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. But also, it's just, that's like bro taste. And, you know, they sent it to critics.
Yeah, like, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, like, Virgin Suicides or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, it's like Letterboxd at Sundance.
Yeah.
That's who cares enough to respond
to
this.
The Dark Knight.
Yeah, exactly. That's unfortunately who cares enough to respond to these prompts or who has time to respond to these prompts.
Oh my God, the shade of that. You're like, not me, not the Variety critic.
I was going to Mexico City to have fun. I was not going to work on the Sundance 40-year list.
That's so funny. Yeah, that's wild. So yeah, Hoop Dreams was not on there.
Hoop Dreams, which it should be. Yeah, yeah, it was just so striking to me that this list is totally not representative, except for maybe Sex, Lies, and Videotape, of anything I think of when I think of Sundance at all.
Maybe like
I don't
like
even remember Whiplash.
Too.
What was at Sundance? Do you?
I certainly did not remember. But like, I would say like the Before trilogy is probably a good shout too.
I mean, Richard Linklater is associated with the festival, so that's why he was in that talk with Christine Vachon and all these other people. So yeah, Good for Linklater. Not my favorite filmmaker, but he is like a Sundance kind of guy.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So
I guess
briefly, should we say like we both think Oppenheimer is getting Best Picture, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it has any competition. Its competition was Barbie, and obviously what the nominations reveal to us is that they like Oppenheimer more.
Yeah. That makes sense. Killers might go home empty-handed, but more than likely
we'll have one
not
Oscar.
More than likely we'll have like Lily,
we'll have Best Actress, which is great because you know what, now another Ellen Bernstein was the only actress in a Scorsese movie to win Best Actress, so now he'll have two. Great for him.
What else is Anatomy of a Fall, maybe.
I think
Anatomy
of a Fall might win screenplay because if you think about it, it's not nominated in foreign language because it wasn't submitted. It probably will not win Best Actress. I think it will win screenplay.
Yeah, I think so.
And now, unless they just decide they want to give Alexander Payne another Oscar, he's already won screenplay before.
Right. Twice.
Yeah, so I'm like, enough. Yeah, he
and
doesn't need a third.
Zone wins international.
Zone will win international, yeah. Which is good because it goes to Glazer and Trier will win. And so, yeah, that would be great. But who knows? I think the best thing that happened to Justine Trier is that Barbie moved from original to adapted.
So true. Do you have any thoughts on that debate at all?
You know what? Who cares? Like, it's yeah. mundane rules. But I actually agree. Like, this was not a creation from the mind of Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach. Like, they had the dolls, they had the world in the dolls, they had the characters. Like, it is an adapted, no?
Yeah. I similarly think it's like kind of silly and I don't care.
Yeah.
I do think it kind of like it's complicated to me just because I do feel like there's no existing plot to kind of like adapt from. Like, a lot of the characters are preconceived or whatever, but like clearly it's an original concept. But also, like, Zone of Interest was adapted, and that has, as we said, literally nothing to do with the book. And I feel like Poor Things too was adapted quite loosely as far as I'm aware. So you know, who cares?
It's I'm just glad there are two screenplay categories, because then you get to see 10 movies acknowledged as opposed to five. So,
and
keep it like this. Do not change it.
You know what? I think this is going to be a year where, like, the awards are kind of spread out too. Like, it's not going to be like a couple of them will win more than one, but it's not going to be like seven awards to one.
I think Oppenheimer is going to win a lot. It will win film and director in the big categories that we just talked about, and won't win anything else.
Yeah,
it's going to win a lot. If it has three in the top categories, like, it's going to win editing and cinematography and, I don't know, sound.
Do you think it's going to win cinematography?
Well, it's the movie they love the most. Sometimes that's just it.
Yeah,
I think it's
going to
come up with 7-8.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah. It's a coronation.
Oh, God.
It's a director who made a lot of money, who's been working for a long time. It's just like Titanic, when they decided finally to nominate James Cameron, and then they're like, yeah, we're going to give him 10 Oscars in one night. So I think it's going to be one of those nights.
Okay.
sorry to burst your bubble.
I know. I was just thinking about this the other day. I was like, I don't think I've ever given so much care and attention and energy to something that consistently disappoints me the way I have
with the Oscars,
the
right?
The Academy of Motion Pictures, Art and Sciences.
I know. But I think we have 20 very good performances nominated. Yeah. Sterling K. Brown is the only dud, in my opinion, but the others are really good, and it's good to see them all acknowledged.
Love it.
Yes. All right. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at I Am Picture Show. I'm on Twitter at Emmy_says and on Instagram at Mortada_E. And Izzy.
I am BK Rewind on Twitter and BK_Rewind on Instagram.
And until next time, thank you. Bye.